Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for spending some time with me today. Dr. Nicholas Trout's new book, a novel, The Wonder of Lost Causes, examines relationships, mother and son, husband and wives, humans and dogs, especially when the human is ill and the dog's history is a mystery. So here's the plot. Jasper is an 11-year-old who has a painful disease, cystic fibrosis, which interferes with his ability to breathe, among many other issues. His mother, Kate, is a vet at a dog shelter, one with limited space, if you know what I mean. One day, the shelter takes in a dog who looks worse for wear and who quietly refuses to cooperate or answer to the name associated with his implanted microchip. But when 11-year-old Jasper meets the dog, he announces to the adults that they're using the wrong name and the dog's name is actually Whistler. And he knows because the dog told him, somehow. The two share an extraordinary, possibly telepathic connection. Jasper wants desperately to adopt Whistler, while his mom grapples with the choice between granting her son's wishes and keeping him alive and as close to healthy for as long as she can. The book is personal for Dr. Trout in many ways. He is a veterinarian and the father of a child with cystic fibrosis. Nick Trout, welcome to All of It.
Allison, thank you so much for having me on the show.
So, Nick, what do you... May I call you Nick?
Absolutely,
okay.
Please.
Nick, what do you think makes stories about humans' relationships with animals, and really with dogs specifically, so compelling?
I think dogs have never been more important in human life. We live in this crazy, hyper, impersonal world, and you know, we would rather stick earbuds in our ears than have a conversation. We'd rather text than actually make eye-to-eye contact. And suddenly into our world, at some point in our day, can be this animal who will just slow us down and distill things down to the things that matter, the emotions that matter. And, you know, I think we've, as a society, have never needed dogs more. And that connection that we have to them has never been more important.
Now, the chapters in the book alternate between the points of view of Jasper, this precocious, very funny 11-year-old, and Kate, his mom, who is a single mom, doing the best she can, trying to pay the bills. Why did you decide to write the book with these alternating points of view?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, it became vital to what I was trying to convey in this book. Like you mentioned, I have a daughter, Emily, she's now 26 years old. She's listed for double lung and liver transplant at the Cleveland Clinic. And so as a father, I've had this experience firsthand watching what this amazing, strong, bright, vibrant child has gone through to survive. And so I wanted to try and capture some of that determination of these kids, not just with CF, but any chronic illness, to live life to the most, to try and be as normal as possible. With regard to writing in the first person as a woman, that was certainly a writing challenge for me, but again, vitally important because, like it or not, the primary caregiver for children with chronic illness, be it CF, be it diabetes, be it autism, they're the moms, and I wanted to try my best to capture their voice, to capture the struggles, the fears, the hopes, the determination and bravery that these moms have. And so it was a no-brainer in the end that was how I needed to set this book up.
And I think there's just this interesting dynamic within Kate, within the mom, of wanting to protect her son, yet an encounter with another parent shows her that maybe by protecting him, she's not letting him live his life as he would like.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think we all grapple with that, in that you as a parent naturally want to protect. You have this, you know, this misconception that if I do everything right for my child, if I cocoon them in a safe environment, if I don't let them have those play dates where they might get sick, where they might come into contact with other kids with a common cold that could be disastrous, if I make sure all their medications are done appropriately on time, that I can somehow impact their longevity, that I can keep them with us for longer. And the truth is that when you go to that extreme, they miss out on living, they miss out on life, they miss out on adventures and all the things that make their lives memorable rather than a life that that as a parent you've controlled for them. And that encounter is really part of this wake-up call to how should I live.
You have chosen that Kate is a single parent. And hearing your accent, when I Googled you, I sort of laughed because the absent father is a British fellow. Why did you choose to make Kate a single mom?
Because I wanted her to have the sort of pride of doing this on her own. In the book, we create some tension within her family as well. You know, this child was conceived out of wedlock, and Kate just wanted to have this child. This child was important, and it just felt like I had another statement to make there for single moms out there, saying, you know, my kid doesn't have to be sick for me to have a tough time bringing up a member of my family, when perhaps, you know, I'm trying to hold down a full-time job, I'm trying to pay the bills, I'm trying to get my kid off to college, you know, and I'm worried about what the future will hold. All of these things that you know, I could sort of take to a higher level of stress and intensity and bravery through the writing of Kate as a single mom.
Let's talk about Jasper a little bit, and then we'll talk about Whistler the dog and then all of their relationships. My guest, by the way, is Nick Trout, and the name of his new book, his new novel, is The Wonder of Lost Causes. Jasper in the book is really funny, really smart kid, but he does get exasperated, and he's a little bit tired of people always asking if he's okay, or when he has one of his sort of, when coughs seize him. What are you hoping readers who aren't familiar with CF can learn from this book about it and about living with it?
Yeah, I mean, cystic fibrosis, the number one genetic killer of children and young adults in the United States. It's a hidden disability, and like all hidden disabilities, we tend to lose sight of the severity of the disease that these young people, children, are living with. For example, you know, I've read stories of brave young CF adults who've, you know, taken a seat on the underground system or on a bus that was for disabled folk, and people look at them and think, well, you look normal. You don't resemble my definition of a disability, and yet these people are breathing, 25% oxygen carrying capacity. So they are breathing like they're on top of Mount Everest. And yet on the outside, they're trying to do things. They're trying to be normal. It is like so many of these hidden disabilities. You pull up to a parking lot with a disabled sticker on your car, and people look at you and go, I don't see it.
Right.
Well, just because you don't see it doesn't mean it's not real. And I wanted also to make awareness of this disease, because, you know, unlike so many diseases that we deal with in all of our lives, and we've all got these problems, we've all got challenges, you know, it's nothing exceptional to me or just people with CF. We all have our battles and pains within our own lives. But, CF is a disease that is so chronic, and it just goes on and on. You know, you're born with this disability, and as a chronic disease, with the best intentions of family and friends, it's hard to sustain that level of support, because, you know, you constantly have this background noise in your life of a child being unwell and then okay, doing well for a while and then being unwell again. And there are many other diseases for which you can, as a group, as a family, as a community, rally around and support for this intense period of time, because maybe there's this big positive cure, remission, beating cancer or some other disease, and there's all this sort of feel good. Whereas for many of these chronic illnesses, it just is on and on, and it's this slow, long haul problem. And you know, it's I've been in that position before. I've had a child with a chronic disease. It's hard to sustain support.
Let's talk about Whistler the dog. Enter Whistler. And Whistler is not a looker, and he's clearly had some issues. He's possibly been abused. Yet he and Jasper, from the jump, from the beginning, clearly have some sort of connection. Why did you decide to tell the story with this sort of like a little bit of a supernatural element to it?
Yeah. You know, some of this was born from an American Animal Hospital Association survey from some years ago that said, how many pet owners speak to their pets? And the answer, of course, is 100%. But more telling was the question, what percentage of pet owners believe they know what their pet is saying? And the answer came back as 97%. And I thought, wow, that's a short jump from that degree of confidence that so many people believe they sense, because obviously this is not verbal communication, but we have this sense due to the strength of our relationship with the animals in our lives that we know what they're trying to tell us. And I didn't want to do a Dr. Doolittle book. I didn't want this to be a talking dog book. It was really sort of extending that gut feeling of, yeah, you know, I get what you're telling me. And then to some extent, with Jasper, as a young precocious boy, he's saying, believing that everything happens for a reason, and if that reason, you know, if I got cystic fibrosis, what's the upside for me? What's the deal? My disease is taking so much away from me. It's taking away my sense of smell, my sense of hearing, my sense of touch. So there's got to be a trade here. There's got to be some upside, and that upside for him is his belief, his absolute belief that he has a gift, that he can understand what this dog is telling him, and in doing so, tap into that canine philosophy on life. And, you know, Whistler is this perfect conduit. For me, Whistler is this immeasurable mutt, is just a beaten up dog that you would never think of adopting and be fearful would never get adopted. And yet here he is. And to me, I wanted this dog to be every dog. I wanted him to be bits and pieces of what everybody sees in their own animal, because what Whistler ultimately conveys to both Kate and Jasper is there in all of the dogs in our lives.
Jasper has a line around the middle of the book, which he tries to explain his connection with Whistler, and he says, you know, dogs aren't afraid to die. That's why they're so excited to live. At what point in the writing process did that idea come to you?
Yeah, I mean, it was all part and parcel of me trying to define and you know, draw upon my, what's scarily now, 30 years veterinary experience. I was came to the realization it was 30 years ago this summer that I graduated veterinary school, which is kind of frightening, but that sort of realization that, you know, through my professional career, the animals I come into contact with, and I deal far more with dogs than other animals, they're so forgiving. They do have that sense of living to the max, of enjoying the moment. You know, part of the problems for pet owners these days are all the choices available to us in terms of our animals' healthcare. And, you know, because dogs don't have that ability to say, okay, I'm going to go through chemotherapy and I'm going to be miserable in the short term, but look at all the upside on the other end. They don't have that. They live in the now. And because they live in the now, we as pet owners have to make those decisions for us. But by living in the now, they are living in the moment. They are not having bad hair days. They're not worried about whether an outfit makes their butt look fat. They're just go, 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 you know. And I think at one point I talk about the fact that even when they're asleep, they do this phenomenal job of sleeping the deepest possible sleep ever. You know, and it was really the cumulative effect through having dogs in my life for my life, and also through my professional career, saying I would like to convey what it is about their take on life that can be so beneficial to so many of us, particularly in times when we're looking for a path forward, when we're looking for inspiration, when we're looking for security.
My guest is Dr. Nick Trout. We're talking about his new novel, The Wonder of Lost Causes. We'll continue our conversation after a quick break. Stay with us. This is All of It from WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest is Nick Trout. He is a veterinarian, and he is the author of a new novel, The Wonder of Lost Causes. So, Nick, we've introduced our main characters, Kate Jasper and Whistler the dog. The time and place is very interesting of the book because the mom, Dr. Blunt, she works in what's called a limited shelter. People often call them kill shelters. What kind of dilemma does that create for her? And I'm wondering why you made that choice.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going through a really good time right now of, our sense of doing the right thing, of all these animals in shelters and trying to find them homes and shipping animals from, you know, the south up to the northeast corridor and, you know, finding them homes. This is all really good, and so I wanted to bring attention to what I hope is something that is disappearing now with these kill shelters. There are still, unfortunately, these limited shelters, and I just felt, you know, I work for the Massachusetts Society of Prevention and Cruelty to Animals, which also has a huge role in animal welfare in the state of Massachusetts. It was really to try and draw attention to the frustrations that these incredible people who work in shelters go through, trying to find homes, matching animals with potential pet owners. You know, they work so hard to do that, and you know, with appropriate funding, you know, no animal would be forced to, you know, either lose their life or be stuck in a shelter. And it was really an attempt to sort of say, this is not right, and we can do something about it. And as we see through the, you know, by the end of the book, that something is going to be done in this instance.
Yeah, there's that. You touch on several controversial things in the book. You talk about the limited shelters. You also, there's a discussion point about service animals, because yeah. Jasper wants to have Whistler as a dog, and the home they live in, he has to have has to be officially a service animal. And there's a debate in the book about whether he actually is for Jasper or not, and if they can get their hands on a vest and a fake certificate, should they do that? What do you think is fueling the public's misunderstanding about service animals? Because some people are doing that to get their animals into an apartment or into a dorm, or because they might feel like they need the animal as a service animal, even though it's not a trained one.
Yeah, I mean, my daughter Emily has a fully trained service dog, you know, and this dog went through 18 months of training. This is a bona fide group called NEEDS. They provide excellent service dogs. And so I did have a lot of experience seeing firsthand what these dogs do and what they can do. You know, they just can totally revolutionize, change people's lives who really, truly need them. And yet in my professional world, yes, I see owners coming in claiming that this is a therapy dog or this is some kind of emotional support dog. And there's clearly this huge gray area as to what is real and what is not. I again wanted to take the opportunity to say in the book that these service dogs may do what seem to be very small tasks, but the way they can impact and change a person's life, to make them feel autonomous, to give them a chance at doing a job, at leading a normal life, is massive. It's, you know, there's really no words to describe. You know, when I've been to some of these graduations for service dogs, and I've spoken at service dog graduations, There was really no need for me to say any words to make a speech. These people who come up and take the microphone and say, this is what this animal means to me. Make you laugh, make you cry, but so sincere, so important.
And one other issue you tackle in the book is addiction. Kate is holding it together, but she squirrels away some Adderall, and her sister, we learn in the book, has substance abuse issues. Why did you want to introduce that into this story?
Yeah, I mean, it was just, at one point Kate talks about needing to be a mom and having to find ways to fit work and parenting and managing a chronically ill child. And it's just, she fell down at some point on, medication that would keep her sharp and focused and help her try to be the best mom she could be. She realizes, as the book goes along, that this is not the crutch she really should be using, and changes that. But again, it was part of making her fallible, making her human, making her someone that you could relate to. In the reader's section, questionnaire section of at the end of the book, I've put in there, how does that make you feel? Does that make you think any less of her? And I didn't really worry whether it did or not. I wanted just to make her human, to be flawed. But at the same time, could you ask yourself, if I were in her situation and I needed to make sure I didn't screw up my child's medication at 2 o'clock in the morning, would I do, put myself in the same situation? Would I rely on something to keep me sharp and focused if I needed it?
Well, to find out what happens to Kate, Jasper, and Whistler, you have to read the novel, The Wonder of Lost Causes. Dr. Nick Trout, thank you so much for joining us on All of It.
Allison, thanks so much for having me on the show.
Se você disser que eu desafino amor.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.